You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. What happens when a cash-starved city loses its grip on the ability to govern and provide basic services for its residents? New research from Michigan State University shows nonprofits and foundations are stepping in to fill the void in Michigan cities, such as Detroit and Flint. Sarah Reckow is an associate professor of political science at Michigan State. Sarah, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah, just explain to us what we're seeing happen in Detroit and Flint with the role of these nonprofits and these foundations.
So there's a few things that have been going on that I've worked on a study with Davia Downey from Grand Valley State and Josh Sapochny here at Michigan State with me. And we've looked at how the size of local government has changed and then how nonprofits have become involved in these cities, especially after both cities experience fairly significant public sector crises. We're very familiar, of course, with the Flint water crisis here in Michigan, as well as the bankruptcy in the city of Detroit. Both cities experienced these crises, which directly impacted their local public sectors, but also in a context where the local government had been cut back quite a bit over many years leading up to the time of the crisis.
Yes, very much. I mean, emergency managers in both cities.
Yes. And even before the emergency managers. So the emergency managers, in some sense, accelerated some things that were already going on, especially in Flint. And what has happened is the nonprofits came along in many respects to take on roles that filled services and needs that residents had. I mean, if you think about the Flint water crisis, there was an immediate need to provide drinking water to residents, respond to health needs and other aspects of the way the crisis was affecting people. But in Detroit, it's come down in all kinds of other ways surrounding local development and neighborhood redevelopment efforts where nonprofits are playing a role in areas where you normally expect city government to be the leading player. And this comes through in funding, in decision making, and in on-the-ground service delivery in both cities.
As you've put it rather elegantly, you've got nonprofits doing heroic work, but they shouldn't be providing basic public services.
That's what we're trying to shine a spotlight on, is something that I hope people will question, at least, is whether this is sustainable and whether it's the kind of thing we would expect in other cities. We might take it for granted if you live in a Bloomfield Hills or other cities in Michigan that you have a local government that's going to do all kinds of things for you. Leaf collection, recycling, you have strong public safety, you don't question things about your drinking water supply, and yet we've allowed this condition to persist in Detroit and Flint, also cities in Michigan, and we want to draw attention to what's been going on.
It is rather eye-opening that you point out that Detroit's and Flint's governments shrunk far greater than their populations declined, so it's being hollowed out.
Absolutely.
Is this unique in the nation? Is there precedent that has been set elsewhere on these type of public-private partnerships where you're seeing the nonprofits taking over?
So it is not entirely unique. I think what Detroit and Flint present is more extreme examples where the extent of the hollowing out of government is larger and you compound that with the specific crises that occurred. But if you look at cities like Baltimore, for example, you're going to see comparable situations in certain areas where nonprofits have played a very large role, private funders, some of the redevelopment efforts on the east side of the city look very similar to some of the things going on in Detroit in terms of private money and who's involved in decision making. So it's not completely unique. We just think that these examples are the more extreme cases.
Sarah, what are the possible strengths and the possible pitfalls of seeing these strong foundations stepping in where government should be?
It is important to point out some strengths. I mean, they've been very responsive and in some ways are more flexible than governments, especially noteworthy with the Flint water crisis, where there was a need for such immediate response, some on-the-ground knowledge there. And so the work of the United Way and the Community Foundation and organizations there simply to coordinate efforts across all sorts of groups that were coming into the city and keep that effort going is worth celebrating. And nonprofits, depending on how they operate, they can sometimes be closer and more responsive to communities. What also happens, though, are nonprofits can be more responsive to their funders or to other interests. And one of the examples we bring up in the paper is the case of the Q Line or the M1 rail in downtown Detroit, which has added another transit option in the city. But it's important to point out how small that is as a service. Most transit users in the city of Detroit live in neighborhoods that are not at all accessible to the corridor of the Q Line. And that is a large part of very privately funded and nonprofit managed transit line, which is, of all things you would expect, public sector involvement, infrastructure would be right there at the top.
Who gets left behind when struggling municipalities partner with these groups?
People can be left out when local government leads to. Local government is not always perfect in how they operate. But I think as a general point, the issue that more vulnerable people in cities who are going to depend on having some kind of baseline of public services that you don't necessarily have to constantly advocate for or have special access in order to make your voice heard are potentially going to suffer. And when you think about things like parks maintenance in the city of Detroit, which now relies very heavily on private funding and private partnerships and is focused a lot on certain areas of the city. You go to the riverfront area where there's the Detroit Riverfront Conservancy, you know, a public-private partnership. You have the corridors and the downtown area, and they look beautiful, and there's beautiful grass, and things are taken care of, and there are flowers. And then you go out to some of the neighborhoods around Detroit, and you get a much more mixed picture of the shape of maintenance of parks that people would probably very much like to be able to use, but are looking at high grass or, you know, broken equipment. So can you maintain a parks department that has a staff that can actually do the day-to-day work that it takes to have a city with good public space for the entire population?
If you've just joined us, I'm speaking with Sarah Recco, who's an associate professor of political science at Michigan State University, as we talk about nonprofit philanthropies, governance, and cities. Could we, now that you've done this research and really thought about this, Sarah, could we envision a future where a CEO potentially has more say than a mayor over how a city's functioning?
I think that is entirely possible, though I think it's important, if we're speaking about the specifics of Detroit, that Mayor Duggan and the city in the post-bankruptcy era has regained some important capacity. And we talk about this in the paper, that there's a difference between Flint and Detroit. And the bankruptcy did allow Detroit to step out with somewhat stronger footing, and Flint is in a tougher position. But that being said, Duggan is facing a situation where he relies quite a lot on partnerships with corporations, negotiating with folks like Dan Gilbert and the Illich family, and they have a lot of power. I think everyone who follows City of Detroit politics is very aware of that.
So should there be more regulation or oversight of foundations and nonprofits that make decisions or craft visions for municipalities?
I mean, this is an interesting question. What is the approach? If we acknowledge there's reasons to be concerned about this, is it regulation? Or on the other hand, would it be a question of thinking about how cities, the resources that actually come into the public sector. Could we strengthen our public sector so that when you have a problem, when you need, you know, money to maintain your parks, or when you need money to upgrade infrastructure, you don't go out hat in hand and ask for corporate money. Instead, you actually have adequate tax revenue coming in to fund these public services that we all depend upon. And the truth is that the state of Michigan has policies that make it kind of hard for local governments, especially in cities like Detroit and Flint, with a lot of legacy costs and population loss. It makes it very hard to maintain their services.
Yes, it certainly seems like your paper is kind of challenging these state policies that have so limited local governments and, we should say, school districts' ability to pay the bills, pay for the personnel and the infrastructure. So they've got that incentive to seek private funding.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that really struck me as a anecdote related to this research from the fall was when the Detroit and Flint school systems had to seek private funding to ensure their students would have clean drinking water in the schools, because Flint, of course, has had the long-term lead issue. And then the Detroit schools tested their water and found high levels of lead. And so they were going to install drinking water stations. And in Flint, they got funding from Elon Musk, the billionaire, and Detroit received private funding from several foundations around the city. If you look at the way Michigan funds school facilities, we rely on local property taxes. And Detroit and Flint have really struggled in that area because property values became so depressed for so long in those cities.
Are these relationships sustainable well into the future? Because it takes time to fix things, to move a municipality in a better direction. I guess I'm saying it seems like an awful lot could be lost if the relationship becomes fraught, or a mayor or the president or CEO disagree on the path forward for the city.
It does put public officials in the position of having a pretty big investment in making sure they are on the good side of people who can offer them resources. You could suffer in the long run if you've angered the people who are in your kind of elite business class, and then the next time you're trying to seek partners for a project or hoping they might expand their businesses, they're not very happy with you at all, and maybe they want to leave the city. This is not new in city politics by any means. I do think what happens when the public sector is this eroded, it simply adds more power to the private sector side of that power dynamic.
Who do you hope will read this research you've done?
I hope that people who are involved with state politics will take some time to pay attention. I know there's been discussion about the emergency manager policy and revising that, and that would be a step. But the reality is there are bigger aspects of the way the state governs the finances of localities, whether it's revenue sharing, which was cut back for many, many years and has really not recovered, or the ways that cities face tax and expenditure limits, which can make it hard to raise revenue at the local level. These things really affect the flexibility of cities to make sure that public services are adequate as needs change, as the costs of infrastructure and other things can change and go up over time.
Sarah Recco is an associate professor of political science at Michigan State University. Her research looking into the way that nonprofit philanthropy groups have been getting unprecedented involvement into how cities like Detroit and Flint are governed. Thanks for speaking with us, Sarah.
Thanks very much for having me.